Ladies and gentlemen, there's been a murder, and the killer is in plain sight. For at least one person, this is not a game.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast, where we aim to provide our unique insights on your favorite movies. And today, we are talking about Rian Johnson's, probably no one's going to see this until it hits Netflix in December, but The Glass Onion and Knives Out Mystery.
Who the hell is Rian Johnson, Andrew? What are you talking about?
Is this the second time in the row I get a name wrong?
It's Mr. Rian Johnson, a.k.a. the man who ruined Star Wars. But in all seriousness, yeah, he's back. He's another writer-director combo, Knives Out sequel, crazy backstory about how this film was bid out. And it's the same story as the first one. Benoit Blanc solves a mystery with a whole new set of characters, like an Agatha Christie novel. I don't know why this movie wasn't in theaters longer. My theater was absolutely jam-packed with a lot of folks, a lot of good jokes that just won't hit as nicely at home. But if you like murder mystery stuff, if you like the comedy that Daniel Craig brings to this, if you like the first one, you'll like this one as well, Andrew. I think it hit all the check marks when it comes to the sort of murder mystery. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but at the same time, you know, it doesn't take itself that seriously. What more do you really want from the film? It was incredibly entertaining. It had me pretty gripped for the most part. And overall, it's a pretty neat package.
Yeah, right away, talking about our first thoughts on the movie leaving the theater, I agree with you. It wasn't really as solid or as impactful as the first one. I think the first one was a lot more intricate and nuanced. I think it had a lot more spins and twists to it compared to this one. I felt like it should have been swapped and like the stories that should have been done first. I feel like this movie, The Glass Onion, should have been done first, followed by the first one. I just felt like when I was watching this movie, the first half was a lot of just build up, introducing characters, talking about their personalities, what they're from, what they're doing. Like, do we really need to know that Dave Bautista's character is an alt-right Twitch streamer? Like, stuff like that. Like, they put so much emphasis on that. I was like, why are we listening to all this? I felt like from the very beginning in the first one, we knew right away what we were getting into, and it kind of started really fast from what I remember. This movie compared to the first one, I agree again. I think it kind of lacks in a lot of taste and a lot of trickery. I think we talked about this earlier, that obvious misdirection with that random guy that kept walking around in the background.
Yeah.
That was kind of insulting. I feel in a way, it's like, was this Rian Johnson's really way of like trying to trick the audience? Like, he's going to be the one that commits the murder and like you'll never, you know, think that it's him. It's like, that felt kind of personal that he thinks we're that dumb that we would probably fall for that. Because otherwise, that guy was not even a comic relief. He had like no purpose in the entire movie except just being the misdirection. I didn't like that at all. But how did you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I agree with you that the first one is way better. I mean, I look at it this way. You know, Rian Johnson, from his depression, from the post-Star Wars Last Jedi fallout and all the hate he was getting, he went out, he wrote Knives Out, he directed it. It was a surprise hit. A lot of folks loved it. And this is the sequel. I think, you know, the first one's definitely a better movie. And this one was more of a situation, and we'll talk about it more later, where it's like they get paid a bunch of money. Hey, come make a sequel. So he did. So it was perfectly fine and competent. But yeah, there's a lot of backstory. There's a, you know, going to get into spoilers here. So if you haven't watched the movie, definitely stop listening now.
Yeah.
But there's the whole massive flashback sequence, kind of diving into the characters and, you know, what they're like and all that. And because of the reveal at the end, it was all a little pointless. I actually liked the first half of this movie. I know a lot of folks say it was slow, but to me, it was intriguing build-up. It's all about building the mystery. You know, what are the characters' motivations? But you always have to have the payoff, and that was where it kind of lacked. And I think that's why they went in with that huge, massive, you know, ending climax scene where they're destroying everything, because they knew the actual reveal of the villain, the reveal of, you know, who killed Andy, it wasn't going to satisfy the audience. They needed to go bigger and better. So it's not as good of a movie as the first one, but, you know, it's still a very fun flick. it's just a little disappointing for me, only because a lot of the critics and folks were saying, oh, it's improved upon the sequel. You know, it does build up some expectations in your mind. I can't imagine anyone thinking this is better than the sequel. And I totally agree with you. Some of the characters, like Dave Bautista, it's like, okay, I get what you're trying to say there and all that, but it's like a little too on the nose with some of the commentary he was trying to make. It's not as... I like Rian Johnson, but he's not as clever as he thinks he is. He's nowhere near as clever as he thinks he is.
Nah, see, that's something that I feel like should be said out loud a lot more. I think he has a very cocky ego, this guy. I think now with Knives Out, he feels like super empowered. What did he do before Star Wars? Didn't he do like one of the Planet of the Apes movies? Like just one of them?
Is that like... No. He did... He did a little small film called Brick. He did a really good sci-fi movie called Looper. And he directed a couple of the most famous episodes of Breaking Bad. So small resume, but a pretty clean one. Uh-huh. You know who Rian Johnson is? He's Miles Braun in this movie. He's a fraud. That was about himself. You know he's a fraud. No, I'm just kidding. Like I said, this movie is really well directed for the most part. It's well paced. I don't want to be too critical about it. I'm just a little let down. I think the first one's a great film. That's why I had higher expectations. And this one, I know it's coming to Netflix. That's what it kind of feels like. It feels like the straight to Netflix sequel that tries to be bigger, but it's just not as intriguing. Where in the first film, the way it ended with the character, yep, like, you know, staring down the family and the whole kind of like class separation thing, it was like, wow, it was really satisfying. A lot of clever mini twists. This one relied way too much, in my opinion, on that huge flashback sequence when they're going through the checklist, like, oh, this person, they have a motive and they're related to this. It's like they were doing that for every character and it all ended up being the same. It was like, okay, wow, shocker, it's Edward Norton, it's the big bad billionaire who's the evil villain and all that. It's like it was there were some interesting twists, but I thought it could have been a little more, it was not as good of a reveal as it was kind of building up to be.
100%. It was not the reveal that I wanted. I felt like when I compare to the first movie and I think of like someone that was very memorable, so aside from Ana de Armas, Chris Evans was very memorable in that movie. And I think if you just try to compare who's the most memorable one out of this giant cast, I would probably say Janelle Monáe. Like, she just, some kind of star-studded performance. I really liked the way she acted this whole movie.
Yeah.
But I want to, let's dive into that then. Let's go straight into what we liked and disliked about the movie, because I feel like this is a perfect segue to get into that. So I'll start off by continuing my point that I really like Janelle Monáe's acting performance. I didn't see that coming. I've seen her live in concert once before and it was really good show, but I didn't see,
I don't know who she is. Oh, she's I'm looking it up right now. Like, is she a musician?
Yeah, she is. She just like pop music. She had like one tiny part in like that one hit song in the summer of like 2016, Fun. I don't even know how that song goes, but if you look it up, if anyone looks it up, you'll know what I'm talking about. But anyways, she did really good. I really liked the way that every actor, they delve deep into like what the personality was about. Like Kate Hudson's character being like that dipsy blonde that was like, you know, really dumb. She did that really, really well. I was kind of like laughing about how well she's playing it. And then there was Dave Bautista being like the grunt of the team, and he did perform that really well. I really liked the way the cast. I feel like there was no misses. Little fun fact for you guys before we jump into it at the end. Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory was supposed to play Birdie from that Kate Hudson plays. So I think they did I think they did the casting really well done here. So I had a fun time with that. Another thing that I really liked was the sensory overload. I know in the past we've talked about how like a lot of movies give us like a bunch of sound effects. Like when we did the Minions, we talked about how that was like all sensory overload of just nonstop Bill Nye sound effects. But this one was all visually overstimulating. Like when you go into the billionaire's foyer, or not even the foyer, like just his living room, you see all these statues, these glass statues, all the paintings, the different colored, you know, of everything, that the bright red couch. It was visually overstimulating, and I really liked that. For I don't know why, but for some reason it just really struck out to me, and it was beautiful. Like, just the set design that they did there was amazing. The story overall, I think, could have been well more polished. Again, this was like definitely done over pandemic time, so who knows how well he worked on it, but I felt like it could have been polished a little bit more. But I won't get into my dislikes yet. I want to hear you, Santi. Like, what were your likes about this movie?
Yeah, Andrew, this film was really funny. I think it was actually a lot funnier than the first one. I was several times, like many times throughout the film, where I was just cracking up in theaters. I know I was joking earlier about Rian Johnson not being as clever as he is. No, but there's some pretty good jokes in here, and they actually hit really well. And I think that's because of exactly what you said. You know, the actors really come into their characters. These are really recognizable actors. Edward Norton, Kate Hudson, Leslie Odom Jr., obviously, Dave Bautista. They're really recognizable. You know who they are, but at the same time, they really, camouflage into the character really well.
Yeah.
That's what made it such a convincing film. I also really liked Rian Johnson's directing. He keeps you engaged. He keeps you hooked. That scene inside the under the glass onion, where Kate Hudson's character, she's spinning around and there's a lot of noise going on. It's kind of chaotic. Like, you feel the tension really building up. He's a really talented director. He really hooks you into this film in a considerable way. So, it was funny. I was really invested into the film. I think there's some really good shots in it. And I think you made a really great point mentioning the production on this scene. Like, the whole island mansion thing just looked, kind of awesome. Nothing ever really looked too fake or outlandish, or the set design was really well done. And like I said, overall, really enjoyable film. Most of it does done. And I think, like you, we can slowly get into our dislikes. And I think it's mostly going to be around the story and the payoff of this film.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, it's not bad, but at the same time, it's not as satisfying as you might want it to be. Is that being too harsh? I don't know. Maybe. it's a little too harsh, but I think, it's all about the buildup, right? There's the intricate puzzle thing in the beginning, which, funny enough, that was probably the best scene, too, was Daniel Craig tearing apart.
Yes.
Edward Norton being like, first of all, solving his little game developed. Yeah. And then also at the end, kind of saying, you know what? You're just an idiot. This guy, he's a con artist. He's a scam artist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's just completely full of it. Just a dumb guy who reaps the rewards off of other people. Like I said, some great moments in this scene. And maybe we're just not supposed to take this film that seriously based on that kind of reveal. If it is done by a really dumb bad guy, then how can it be really clever? So I appreciate that. I just think that the bar with 2019's Knives Out was so high with the twist and the reveals it had in that one. That one just kept coming with this one. We're in the twist in this one. It's like, oh, she's shot dead. Goes back, flashback. Oh, no, she's not dead. Oh, they were in on it the whole time. It's like the flashback scene taking forever. Anyway, let's jump right into those dislikes then, Andrew. Give me yours, because I just went off on a couple.
Yeah, no, first of all, you were praising Rian Johnson's directing a lot. So what happened with the Star Wars to you? Why didn't you like that if he's such a good director?
Rian Johnson's a talented director. I think his writing leaves a little bit to be wanted. I think his writing style works great for the Knives Out franchise, but his writing for The Last Jedi was absolutely terrible. It was like a first draft written by like an 11th grader or something like that. Okay. It just didn't fit Star Wars. It didn't fit the sequel that it needed to. Can he make a Star Wars film and it could be really good? Yes, I think so, but it didn't. At the end of the day, when you're making a sequel, you have to fit the tone of its predecessor. You can't just kind of go off in your own direction. He went off in his own direction. He wrote a mama joke 5 minutes into that movie. A Your Mama joke in a Star Wars film.
I don't remember just that.
Just doesn't really fit with the mainline episode. So, again, talented director. Really talented director. Good writer, but just has too much of his, weird stuff in there, especially in a Star Wars film to make a film. But, again, I think in this case, he shot it really well. It was edited fantastically, but it's the writing, just a little bit of writing that brings it a little bit down for me.
And that comes from the Star Wars fanatic himself, that he just did not like The Last Jedi.
I know I'm not alone on that.
I mean, from what I hear, you're totally right, because I'm not such a Star Wars fan myself, but I know a lot of our listeners out there are. So maybe you are on his side, and if you are, great. But we'll get into my dislikes about the movie real fast. I really disliked the puzzle that they did at the beginning that showed zero importance at all whatsoever.
Like, I guess that was the point, though. But yeah, it was so
it was the point. Yeah, but like, why? Like the whole like golden ratio with the circle and then like the north and south directions. Like, it was so overly complicated for absolutely zero reason. The fact that they were all helping each other do it on the call was just even more like, I don't know. It was like, to me, like, what's the point of making an intricate puzzle? And okay, so like, here's my thing, right?
But that was the point. That was the point because Edward Norton's character, he was like an idiot. So like, he acted like he built something really smart and clever to break down, but instead it's just something really stupid that all these really stupid people are acting so smart for taking apart.
So remind me, for the when they were on the dock about to board the boat, remind me, did they check like their notes that they were like as a pass?
Oh, the letters?
Did they do that?
I don't recall seeing that. I think when that one guy showed up, Ethan Hawke, with his weird cameo.
So random.
I think that was kind of like, he knew them all. They knew what they looked like. It was just more of like, I don't think they had to confirm their invitations or anything. Like I said, the scene itself, I'll agree, was pointless because it was just a way to kind of show the connection of all the characters being friends. But I understand at the end, you know, why the puzzles need to be shown like that. It's like someone smart trying to act like they're really complicated, and I guess they weren't. Even though I had no idea what the hell was going on in that scene.
You're peeling off the first layer of this onion with that deep thought. Because my whole thing with those invitation letters was, even with that Ethan Hawke character, didn't he know that there was only going to be like a certain amount of invitations and that there was one extra? Like, did that throw anybody off?
I don't remember if it was in the film, and if it wasn't a film, one of you all listening can tell us about it. But yeah, like, I guess don't think too hard about it. Maybe they did show it and it just wasn't shown like in the film, but they did definitely like have to confirm their invites, and that's why Daniel Craig's character did that.
Two things so far that I did not like about it: the pointless puzzle at the beginning, but you have a good point of why it was included. Secondly, it was very I definitely didn't understand, like, this billionaire with all his security and all these other things that they didn't count, like the amount of people that were on the boat that it shouldn't be, you know, one extra person there. And not only that, like, just like, I don't.
You can argue two extra people.
Two extra. Wait. Who?
Well, Janelle Monáe and Daniel Craig.
Yes, so I'll call them by their name. That's where I was gonna go with the whole invitation
Benoit Blanc
thing.
and Andy.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with the whole invitation thing. How did Andy's character get a box if she was presumed dead? Like,
no. He Miles sent it to her because I guess he didn't. It's a little dumb because the idea is that he knows he's killed her, but he also sent it to her so that people aren't suspicious that he didn't include her. But at the same time, if they're like broken up and like clearly she's out of this group and all the people are like, why are you even here? Why are you even here? I don't think any of them would have tripped for a second if she didn't get an invite. It's a little weird. It's definitely, I don't want to say it's a plot hole, but it's a bit of an oversight because if all the characters are saying, why are you here? Why are you here? It wouldn't have been suspicious if she wasn't invited. She was literally out of the group. They didn't like her. She left the group. So why would she even be invited? It just makes no sense. And if you actually really think about it, Miles Braun, he knows Benoit doesn't belong there. He knows that Andy is dead. I guess he was trying to get... He didn't come across to me as someone who was very nervous and you know...
Yeah, anxious of getting caught.
Yeah, because at the end, in the beginning... when the, you know, lights go, he's all like, oh, I'm scared, I'm gonna like die, and, you know, like, he's I don't know if he was like play acting, but yeah. It was just kind of like, dude, you know, none of those guys are actually there to kill you, you know. Only Benoit Blanc and the twin sister Cassandra. First of all, how could no one have known?
Twin.
Like, oh, she's acting weird. Do they not know she has a twin sister?
Yeah,
I think that would have been you know, pretty obvious.
I mean, even though when twins are twins, they could still have different voices, no? So, like, couldn't they tell that Andy had a different voice than her sister? So, yeah, like there was a couple of things like that that were throwing me off. Like, come on, Ryan. You couldn't figure something better to do, you know, something in this situation? But so stuff like that kind of took me out of the picture, and I was kind of thinking twice of like, this stuff doesn't make sense to me. But
I get that.
So that's pretty much like where I land on, like, I guess now I'm the nitpicker, like how you were last time.
You know, it's valid. It's definitely valid. I would say for myself, Andrew, just kind of going off the dislikes, the main thing is just the climax of this film. Okay, so it's the big reveal, and you felt it as a viewer. The big reveal, Miles is, you know, he's an idiot. He's the one who's been doing all this stuff, setting people against each other, and they knew, like, this isn't enough. This is not enough for a climax. You kind of felt a little underwhelmed, didn't you?
I want to check
with you first.
No, yeah,
yeah, you felt a little underwhelmed. And like, okay, what can we do? Oh, okay, let's have Cassandra go around and smash things and do all that. I'm like, and it was a little over the top. I just didn't enjoy that scene for some reason. I get what they were trying to do, but it was just kind of, I felt like Miles Brown in the situation. Like, you know, come on, guys. Like, this is just dumb. And then I was like, well, it's so obvious it's going to end with the burning of the Mona Lisa.
Uh-huh.
And the tie-in with Benoit Blanc handing her the, what was it called? The K something? Crew? The, clue?
Oh yeah,
Clear.
Clear with a K.
Like, that stuff, like, it was fine, but it was obvious why they had to insert, because this one isn't going to have as good of a murder mystery reveal, so they have to kind of enter that whole, like, yeah, we're taking down the billionaire, and we're going to burn it all to the ground scene. It was a little excessive. I didn't think it was that interesting, so... Most of this movie, I was really going along with it. I was having a good time. Like, this is great. I'm loving it. Now I know why people love it. And then, you know, climax happens, and I was like, it was a little underwhelming. That's my main criticism. Not a heavy criticism, but it's enough to have hampered my enjoyment.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
And the whole point was Benoit Blanc was supposed to be on the case, and then you have Andy doing all the detective work and solving the puzzles and all that. And then, like, I didn't get it. So I do get it in a sense. This whole movie is one giant game of Among Us, like he was playing at the very beginning. Like, there's one imposter amongst your group. And,
all right.
And gotcha. So and that's why, like, I understand why they had Andy do all of the solving, because just like Benoit Blanc was bad at Among Us, he was gonna probably be bad at solving the imposter case on this island. Like, he was able to do the mini game really well with the whole arrow pointing at the chest. He got that down because that's his bread and butter. But then, like, I don't know, at the same time, how you say, dampening his entire pretty much credentials to not being able to solve a case kind of throws me off. Like, isn't this guy supposed to be like the best of the best, and he can't even do one case isolated on an island? I don't know. Yeah,
I guess he did kind of figure it out, but I guess the real question is, what was he really trying to figure out? He wasn't particularly clever, and I thought the transition from him in the first one to this one being known as, like, oh, the world's greatest detective, and just I always hate it when it's like, oh, it's the world's greatest detective, and I just, you know, came up to your house and you answered and you're actually going to go along with me. It's like, bro, like, you better be signing Benoit Blanc like a $3 million check.
I was going to say, where's he's not pro bono.
You can't even see like you can't even stick a private doctor in the United States to help with a sports injury for like less than $10,000. So, it was just dumb.
Did you have any more dislikes about this movie? Because I know
That was it. For me, it was just really the climax of the film. Other than that, I thought it was pretty damn good. It's really just a little bit of the story writing. I'll be honest, right off the top of my head, I don't know how I would have made it differently, but I do wish it was a little different. Not as clever as the first one.
Yeah, okay. I totally get that. So those are our likes and dislikes of the movie, because then again, for those of you who are listening right now, we understand that this movie had a limited one-week release, and like what? Santi, it was like 600 theaters?
Yeah, it was like 600 to 800 theaters, and it made a pretty good amount of money. Let's talk a bit about the production development of this film, if you're ready for that.
Yeah, let's dive into it.
Yeah, so, you know, Knives Out came out 2019, the original. It was the third highest grossing original movie of the year that was not based on an existing intellectual property. $40 million budget made $311 million, obviously. It was a huge success. Rian Johnson was open to a sequel. And then what happened? There was a big bid between Amazon, Apple, and Netflix at an auction. I would love to be a fly on the wall at an auction for a movie like this. So they acquired the rights to the film, the first Knives Out, and a sequel to Knives Out. I hope more, because they paid $469 million $1 million. Yeah, absolutely insane. Wild. Just for the rights of the first film and for the sequel. Apparently, Rian Johnson and his producer that he's done, even did Star Wars Last Jedi with, Ron Bergman, got over $100 million on that deal. They're set for life. Too much money, in my opinion, for a film like this. And you might as well have just opened it to more theaters and got some of that money back. But a little strange with me. Some interesting facts, though. Daniel Craig did work with a dialect coach to kind of get familiar again with Benoit Blanc's southern accent. Obviously, you remember, you know, he is British. He is 007. So a little weird seeing him speak in a southern accent. But I think he does a pretty damn good job of it.
So
funny enough, actually, Rian Johnson was actually thinking about an idea about having Benoit Blanc have a singular different accent for every single film, but I guess they didn't want to make it too confusing to people who aren't aware of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, they end up writing this. He wrote Glass Onion, kind of inspired by a lot of the Agatha Christie films, and the rest is history. He, you know, brought in a lot of the folks, Dave Bautista, Kate Hudson, and so on and so forth, and they made this film. Looks like it's already a box office success, even though it was a limited release. I'm sure it's going to be a massive hit on Netflix when it comes out. I can't wait to see those viewership numbers. My opinion is it's going to be the top viewed Netflix movie in terms of the weekend time frame. And let's be honest, there's going to be a sequel to this. From my understanding, Netflix does have the rights to at least one more Knives Out film.
That's right.
And Rian Johnson already said after the release that he is going to start writing the third film. And you know what? I'm happy about it. I'm a sucker for murder mystery movies. I just saw one called, See the Way They Run. It was in theaters for a short time. It's on HBO Max now. It was not that good, but because it's a murder mystery film, I think it was based on Agatha Christie's novel. It's still, you know, it's always fun. It's always whodunits are always fun, even though we've seen every twist in the game. I think Rian, for these first two movies, has established a very fun and popular franchise. And that is your production news for this movie.
Let me jump in there real quick, because I got a couple more that I want to show our viewer or our listeners. I almost said viewers. Who are you looking at? Because it's not our beautiful faces.
Maybe they're on YouTube.
Is that watching our podcast? That's true. One thing I want to bring up is your favorite movie of all time, Santi, was mentioned in this, that Rian Johnson actually says that he was more scared making the Knives Out sequel than he was when he was making The Last Jedi, which is a very interesting thing to bring up. See, this is why I wanted to bring it up to you.
Dude, there's literally clips of behind the scenes from The Last Jedi where he's like unsure and asking his producer and those around him like, haha, like, you know, like nervous laughter. Huh? I think that's a good idea, right? You know?
And that's how I feel.
There's no way.
I feel like what Rian Johnson did to Star Wars is like what Taika Waititi did to Thor in the Love and Thunder.
No, not even close. No, it's worse.
You know, it's worse.
Thor is one Marvel movie out of like 700 Marvel movies. Like, who cares? Like, it'll get over it. There'll be a Thor 15 and 16 and 17, and people will forget about Thor Love and Thunder. Like, this was the chance for Star Wars fans to see Luke Skywalker in his prime, to kind of get, you know, a great Star Wars film to kind of, you know, give a good closure to these beloved characters. And he just kind of went in his own direction with it. He's like, I'm just going to do my weird thing. You know, he installed too much of his own personality and wants and needs instead of just giving the people what they wanted.
And then they just show Luke Skywalker just drinking titty milk out of a random animal.
I mean, it's just... That's the thing. It's like, oh, it's a deconstruction of his character. It's like, why? You don't need to do this. Like, you know, screw your ego, man. Don't make it about yourself. Just make a good movie based on the characters that exist.
So that's one thing I wanted to bring up, because I know it riles up Santi like a little. I don't know what you call those toys, but I know it riles up Santi. So it's always funny.
Yeah, you know, the wind up chickens or something.
Yeah, there we
go. Baby chickens. But once Netflix paid for the rights to the sequel and the sequel and just the overall rights of the film, over $100 million.
And also
him and his producer, and I think Daniel Craig as well. I mean, Daniel Craig, like, what do these guys do with all this money? Like, Daniel Craig was probably getting paid bank for all the James Bond films.
He doesn't need
it. I genuinely don't know. Like, how have we not solved every single world hunger crisis in the world with how much money some of these actors get paid?
But like
$100 million.
But like,
what are you doing with that money? I genuinely ask you. Like, how much cocaine do these Hollywood people need to buy with $100 million?
And he, I think he's a single man too, but like, is this 100 million treated like the lottery where it's like all in one bunch pre-taxed, or is it like split in payments over time? You know, like,
I got no idea. Like, can you imagine just getting like $100 million like in your bank account one day? It's like you have a couple million in there. It's like, boom, it's just all there. Like, what are they doing with all this money?
Do you withdraw like Bank of America? Like, do you have a credit card? Like, what do you do with that? Do you have a special thing?
I have no idea. Well, that's what happened with Ryan Coogler when the cops pulled the gun on him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, when he went, I mean, he was pulling out, I don't remember, was it $10,000 or $50,000 in cash? But yeah, I mean, it must be a nerve-wracking process. You think you're gonna get robbed. Everything, I guess, you got to pay with Apple Pay or something like that. You don't even go to the bank and try to get cash.
Imagine being Daniel Craig going to the bank teller about to withdraw like $10,000, and he overhears the lady next to him get told her balance is like $2.50. Like, how do you?
He has to come with his Benoit Blanc accent. So they don't know who it is. He has to come out with the Southern accent, be like, yo, can I get my $10 million out here?
Yeah,
I don't
know if that was that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was smooth, all right.
Like molasses, right there. One thing I wanted to bring up. An interesting thing about this movie was, obviously we know it was titled The Glass Onion. And what was Edward Norton's song that he was playing when he first arrived on the beach? He was playing, was it Blackbird, right? The Beatles?
Yeah.
And because the Beatles actually have a song that was written by John Lennon called The Glass Onion, which is a really interesting thing. I think, I'm guessing Ryan Johnson must love the Beatles, because what I was able to dig up about the title was, when John Lennon wrote or titled it The Glass Onion, no one knows why he did. But there's a book out there called The Revolution, The Making of the Beatles' White Album. And it comes up with a very convincing explanation about why Glass Onion was the choice of the song title. It apparently it's, in quotes, I'm reading from a quote, "Glass Onion is a do you get it question mark mocking tune in which Lennon scatters imagery, clues to a non-existent riddle all over the place and invites all of us to make fools of ourselves trying to work it out. The answer is in the title." I get why that is the title of this movie. It's pretty much just scattered all over the island, just clues and riddles and trying to solve the whodunit mystery. So I think it's a very apt title for a movie like this.
You lost me halfway. I felt like I ate some onions and got a little drowsy and sleepy about halfway through that analysis. But is this Ryan Johnson being clever or not as clever as he thinks he is?
Man, see, that's so true, because I feel like he just saw this and was like, I'm gonna use it, because I don't know. You're right, Ryan Johnson, I feel like, is a one hit wonder. So this is what I was gonna ask you then.
I don't know about that. I think he's gonna be a guy, if he keeps making movies, like, his movies will be really good, but I don't think he'll ever make like a great
wasn't
movie.
It,
you know what I mean,
to you, that this movie is probably the first one we've ever seen that was COVID based, like with the masks and the elbow.
It was cool. It was like COVID without them actually mentioning COVID. And then the best part was they were doing all that testing and stuff, and with Ethan Hawke. But then right before the scene, Birdie was at this party unmasked with a whole bunch of people in there, and then right, and I think it was like kind of like calling out, you know, folks who were like meeting with a bunch of people and all that, but then in public they would wear a mask. But then it was just funny, Ethan Hawke's like, you know, what is it, like, what is that?
You think
rich people have had a secret COVID
no, I 100%
here. I don't,
so,
but
yeah,
I don't, because too many athletes still got, I mean, they might have got first access to the vaccine, absolutely, but still,
well,
like, you have like millionaire athletes, they don't follow it as much anymore, but they would get COVID. So I don't think there was some like,
you know, I don't know, I don't want to dive into it. That's for a whole another podcast right there.
Yeah, that's folks, listen to Andrew's conspiracy podcast Wednesdays at 8 p.m. he's gonna dive in. He's, you know, we never landed on the moon, JFK was assassinated, Ryan Johnson isn't actually Ryan Johnson, he's someone else. Parodying
the triangle,
Ryan Johnson,
ate up Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, you know, all that stuff.
One more question I wanted to ask before we get into what we our score is. So we have seen the first Knives Out. Now we have seen the second one. We know a third is confirmed because Netflix bought it. Possibly a fourth out there if Ryan wants to pull a whole, you know, James Cameron Avatar and write four of the same thing. But Santi, do you feel like it should stop here? Or, I mean, at three, I guess, it's already bought for. You think it should stop already? Or do we need more of this?
I think from the reaction of my theater, a lot of folks really like Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc. I'll be honest, I think he's just okay. I don't think he's that funny or interesting of a character. It just, it feels like someone I've, you know, you've seen before, like a, like an Inspector Clouseau, kind of like a dumb, yeah. Like a dumb smart guy. But listen, as long as Rian Johnson is willing to write them, or, you know, kind of be behind them, because, like, you know, I know we sound a bit critical of Glass Onion, but it's still a really, really good film, in my opinion. It's still really entertaining. It's a lot of fun. It's what, anything you can want out of a murder mystery film. And I think as long as they're all kind of behind it, it doesn't really matter. I just like murder mystery films, so I'll take more. But for me, it doesn't matter if it's Knives Out or something else. It could be absolutely anything. But my expectation is that Netflix will milk this to the freaking ground. They're going to go hard. There'll be a Knives Out miniseries. Once Rian Johnson's done with it, if he's willing to get rid of it, I'm sure they'll bring in someone else. Quentin Tarantino will do a Knives Out miniseries on Netflix. Ooh. David Fincher will have like a more serious Knives Out spinoff with like grisly murders and serial killers and that sort of stuff. Yeah, Andrew, to answer your question shortly, I'm all for more movies in this universe.
Yeah, honestly, I do too. I feel like if there is a variety of different cast each time, I feel like at one point we're going to absorb every actor in Hollywood if we keep growing the cast bigger and bigger. I agree. I think we should continue. This is like so unique. I don't think we've ever had like mystery or solving mystery movies. Like what, Sherlock Holmes or the Robert Downey Jr.? Films, like, other than that,
not in this day and age. It feels more like an 80s 90s sort of thing,
and that's what I like about it. It's so fresh, it's new, it's a breath of fresh air almost from everything that we've been just bombarded with recently. But okay, cool. I just wanted to get your idea on that. I wonder, for those of you who are listening, how you feel. Do you want more Knives Out stories, or do you think we should end on the third? So let us know if you get to this part of the show. So with all that put together, and for those of you listening, you know what that means. Santi, out of 5 tickets, what do you give Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery story?
I give Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, a strong, very, very strong 3.5 out of 5 tickets. This is a really well-made film. For the most part, it keeps you really engaged. The characters are very standout and are actually quite memorable. I was thoroughly engaged. I think the twist falls a little bit short, and I don't think it reaches the heights of the original film. But if you like murder mystery movies like I do, I don't think there's anything more satisfying out there than a Knives Out movie such as Glass Onion. So that's my score. Andrew, what's yours?
So this movie, just like the title is, it has lots of layers to it. And I think it was beautiful, like how you tore apart the layer of the puzzles in the box, about how the billionaire was just some guy who pretended to be very smart, intelligent, but really is dumb as a rock. That was real good. How we broke down that this was pretty much an Among Us game, how Benoit Blanc couldn't solve the imposter. I love how this movie did have many layers, and you could consider every character in this movie a layer of the onion, which is very interesting. Even though it was really fun, entertaining, it did lose me at times, and I admit that may just be a me thing.
No, it's not. No. Definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Towards like the middle end, when the flashback scene is getting too long.
Exactly.
Not to intrude too much on your score.
No, you're fine.
I know that's your personal time to talk, but definitely I did lose some engagement.
100%, and that's where I was thrown all over the place. And again, I didn't appreciate how Rian Johnson thought he could throw us off with that random character that was walking around the back. Oh, don't mind me. It's like, then why are you here? You have no relation to literally anybody on here. So I don't know. Some parts were hit or miss with me. Very entertaining. I feel like I'll have to watch it again to understand like more nuances and maybe parts of the mystery that I missed. I don't know. The whole shooting of Andy and how it miraculously hit the book. You know, part of me thought that that bullet that hit the book, that she was going to open it, and the bullet was going to land on the name of the person who committed the mystery. Like, to me, that would have been a little more cool. It's like, oh, they solved it, you know, out of luck. I don't know. So with all that, I give this movie a solid 3 out of 5. It was good, not as good as the first one.
Quite low, Andrew. You caught me off guard with that score. What would you give the first Knives Out?
I'll give that one a 4.
I'd also give it a 4. I know, like, the way I talk about it in this one, it makes it a 4.5. But even that one was a little quirky at times. I just think that the twist and all that were... I mean, I'm looking at the poster right now, and I'm remembering, like, wow, that was a really good damn movie when it came to the twist. Anytime... Because, look, these days, there's so many twists in movies and TV and everywhere that, you know, it's like... We know everything. We kind of know everything to expect. So when a movie is really clever with its twist... It's really clever. It's not like, you know, 1980, Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. It's like, that shit doesn't fly today. People predict that ASAP. I just remember even this one had some good twists I didn't expect. But the first Knives Out, I just remember it was like, it just kept spinning upon. That one should have been called Glass Onion. Because really, that one's the one that had a whole bunch of layers. You remember? Like when it was like...
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Channing Tatum? No, Chris Evans.
What?
His character. Chris Evans. That. Like, that was the one with layers where it was like, oh, holy shit. Even like the first murder, and then it was revealed, oh, the old guy told the Ana de Armas and all that. Anyway, not to talk too much about the original Knives Out. Maybe at some point we will review it, but that was more oniony than this one. This one was, like the glass orange or the glass or something.
Yeah, again, the first one was real more intricate. I think the biggest twist of the first one that I remembered is when Ana de Armas's character like accidentally swapped the vials, and like that's how like the guy died, but like it wasn't her fault, you know, at all. Like, she picked the right vial, but it was Chris Evans' character who, like, you know, switched the stuff inside of it. Like, that's what gave me the twist. It was like, oh, she was like grieving, and she was like, you know, so sad that she killed the guy, but it never really was her.
Yep.
It was a lot more detective-y, like, you know, Batman detective in the first one compared to this one. This one was more, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But those are our scores. We really appreciate you guys sticking through and listening to what we had to say about this interesting movie that came out just for 1 week. Definitely listen to it, or definitely come around to watch it on Netflix. By the way, wasn't it really odd seeing the Netflix logo on a big theater screen?
It was weird. I was surprised It didn't turn into like writing the big letters Netflix.
Just the N?
Yeah, just the N. I thought it was weird, but yeah, it was definitely one. It's like, wow, what's going on? And yeah, apparently theater chains were begging Netflix to let them keep it in theaters. Like, you know, people were coming in buying popcorn, snacks, but Netflix said no. I don't even know why this movie released in theaters, to be honest, because Netflix doesn't want movie theaters to survive unless they want to buy them out. They would prefer people to stay at home and watch them streaming. So curious to see what happens on the business side of that.
Honestly, yeah, I'm interested too. So next week, we have a very special episode where we are going to talk about Will Smith, Emancipation.
That's right, Andrew. Emancipation is coming straight to Apple TV, starring Will Smith, directed by Antoine Fuqua. You might know him from Training Day. It's about a slave named Peter who flees a plantation in Louisiana and has to outwit cold-blooded hunters that are out to get him. And it's basically a torturous journey up north. I think this movie is in black and white, if I recall the trailer, or maybe it's just very muted colors that they went with. But this will be a difficult one to watch. Obviously, it's a very heavy and touchy subject, but yes, even with the controversy around Will Smith, I think this is going to be a really important film, and I'm really looking forward to reviewing it. And I don't think reviews are out yet, but I think some previews did say that it's quite powerful. And I think we were talking about it earlier, Will Smith, if not for the controversy, could have been up and may still be nominated for another Oscar. But it's great to see Will Smith in more serious roles because, you know, controversy aside, he's a great actor.
Great actor. He could have been back-to-back Oscar nominee. I just can't wait. If he does get nominated and like they say his name on the screen, I wonder if no one's gonna clap like for his name. Like it'd be really interesting to see what happens. So stick around, everybody, and come next week as we talk about Emancipation on Apple TV Plus, if you all have that, which I'm sure you do if you see shows like Ted Lasso. And thank you very much, everybody, for listening to our episode of our Tickets for Two podcast. We'll see you next time.
We'll see you then.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.